Last summer's massive bee die-off in the Portland area certainly spurred some interest in having that incident make sense, to mean something, so it resulted in something more than just a pile of dead bees. There was some government action of the administrative sort. There was a hope that with the current legislative session recently opening in the state of Oregon that there could also be some legislative action, but it appears that that legislative action is going to be somewhat different from what the supporters expected in the first place. There have already been some reported changes to the Save Oregon Pollinators Act in the legislature just in the last couple of days. We can talk about the whole point behind the legislation and where things go from here. We have with us from the Xerxes Society in Portland. This is the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation, Ami Code, who is the Pesticide Program Coordinator. Thanks so much for joining us today, Ami.
Yeah, great to be here.
Good to have you. Tell us first about the Xerxes Society itself. First, am I even pronouncing the name correctly?
Yes, it's the Xerxes Society. It was named after one of the very first butterflies that became extinct. We do a lot of work. We work with farmers and other conservation groups to build habitat for pollinators. We work on aquatics as well. Really, we want to work on the foundation of our food web because that's really what preserves all of us. And it's a wonderful organization. I'm pretty new there.
Now, the Society actually was instrumental in publicizing the bee die-off in the Portland area, wasn't it?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
I said the Society itself was instrumental in publicizing the bee die-off, wasn't it?
You know, for a number of years, this issue has been growing. And when the huge die-off in Wilsonville happened, and then three subsequent die-offs quite rapidly after that occurred here in Oregon, people were outraged. People were shocked. And it really hit home that we are losing the foundation of our food source. You know, one in every three bites comes from a pollinator. And our food would be pretty dull if we didn't have pollinators with us. We'd pretty much be eating rice and corn and meat. And we really need our pollinators.
Are the bees that died in the Wilsonville die-off the same bees that pollinate crops? Are we talking about the apples and apples here?
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
The question was whether the bees that were killed by the use of that pesticide in Wilsonville were the same kinds of bees that do pollinate crops.
So they were bumblebees, and yes, actually there are managed bumblebee populations as well as managed honeybee populations. So there might have been wild as well as other bees in the mix, but our native bees are huge pollinators of our crops. There's great stories of, you know, like the squash bee, which has actually evolved along with squash. And as squash production has expanded, so has the range of the squash bee. And so if we're talking about the use of these harmful chemicals in squash production, we're looking at a very significant risk to the squash bee that lives solely on them. So yes, the bumblebees that were foraging on the trees in Wilsonville also very likely could be foraging in on our crops and improving our vegetable and fruit production.
So Ame, what was the regulatory response to the bee die-off? There were some changes made, yes?
So, you know, Representative Reardon was responding to the horrors that happened last summer, and there really were 55,000 bees, four separate incidents. That's over 300 colonies of bumblebees. And so when he responded, he thought, I want people to be informed and aware if they're going to use these so that we can stop this kind of problem from happening in the future. So his reaction was to only allow licensed applicators to use these chemicals that are highly toxic and long-lived, and chemicals that, unfortunately, at the federal level, really are underregulated, because when they were put on the market, people didn't understand their risk. And it took years on the market for us to see the risk that they caused. So his response was, let's get these out of the hands of the general public and ensure that only people with good, solid knowledge about how to protect pollinators are using them. And what he got a huge amount of pushback. Granted, it's a short session. There's a lot of reasons that we can't, you know, develop a full legislation right now because it's a short session and all. But what I realized as I followed this process and I helped work on this effort was how addicted and how hooked on these chemicals people have become. There are so many businesses that want to use these chemicals, and the pushback was huge that they didn't want to stop using them. So I think we really need to build the political will and ensure that we can make it create an Oregon solution. So that's where he started. You asked where he went to. Because the political will wasn't there, because of the heavy pushback, right now the bill has created a task force. We will be sitting on a task force, hopefully, discussing what we can do to create legislation for 2015. And I'm hoping it's a thoughtful conversation where we find solutions that are going to work for people, recognizing that people are used to using these chemicals. They've been on the market for a long time, but also recognize the severe risk that they are posing.
Ame Cote is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Pesticide Program Coordinator for the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or jx@jeffnet.org. Ame, which class of pesticides are you targeting here? Which are the ones you really want to take action against?
This is a group of neonicotinoids. There's four pesticides that the legislation would deal with, and neonicotinoids are they have the nicotine name in there because they are designed to be to act like nicotine would in our bodies. They're the ones that have hit the news because they originally were put on the market as reduced risk. They were thought of to be less toxic than some of the other insecticides out there. They are now the most widely used insecticide in the world. Their use is expanding as we speak. We're looking up in Washington State at their use in an aquatic environment, and sure enough, we're finding concerns in the aquatic environment. Neonics are special in the fact that we've gotten away from a long-lived chemicals. Well, these are long-lived, again, back to, you know, kind of like we think about the DDTs and the ones that were building up for so many years in the environment. So you can find these in the soil after a treatment, you know, years later, and they continue to be uptaken by the plant and can be found in the pollen. And that's really the risk, that these chemicals move through the plant and are systemic and go throughout the plant. That's why they're in the pollen, and that's why they're such a huge risk to pollinators.
And so it was really less about, I mean, the legislation was originally called the Save Oregon's Pollinators Act, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think it was hard to say. There was definitely a lot of names moving around.
All right. But it was less about the name of the bill than the fact is what you really wanted to regulate was not so much any activities of the pollinators themselves, but the sorts of chemicals that were out there in the world. There were some administrative bans put in place by the Oregon Department of Agriculture, at least temporarily, weren't there, on the on dinotefuran in particular and some of the other neonicotinoids?
Absolutely. And thank you so much to the Department of Agriculture for taking those steps. You know, as I mentioned, these are chemicals that are truly at the federal level underregulated. The federal government knows they're underregulated and is actually undergoing a very slow and lengthy process to reconfigure how and make changes to better protect our pollinators. But that's going to be years. So ODA, Oregon Department of Agriculture, after these incidents, did quite a bit of research. And what they realized was Tilia tree, which is the type of tree where all of these incidents this summer happened on, have some minor toxicity of their own to bees. And so that, coupled with the use of these neonicotinoids on the trees, led them to ban the use of these chemicals on those trees. And so basically here in Oregon, and it was a short-term pace, but this is actually for 2014. The labels that are on the market right now, you cannot use these products on those trees.
All right.
That was a great step. But honestly, they are so ubiquitous, so heavily used by homeowners, by nurseries, by landscapers and agriculture. We really do need to take a step back and create a more solid framework. So ODA's step was an excellent step in the right direction. We still have a long road ahead, though.
I have to assume that when you say the political will is not there in the legislature right now to come up with such a strong bill, and instead what happened is you get this bill that forms a task force, so very watered down from what you'd hope to get. Who are the people then, or who are the groups that are working to weaken this bill?
You know, I want to first say that I do think everyone recognizes there's a problem. There are some people who are still out there, you know, arguing the science, because science can always be argued. But I think the vast majority of people, no matter what side they are on regulation, feel that we do need to address the issue of neonicotinoids and pollinators. But as I mentioned, there's a lot of businesses who have gotten used to these chemicals. You know, nurseries use these chemicals. They don't have to be licensed applicators. They can be unlicensed, and that will reduce cost to not have to go through that licensing and having someone with that professional status. So you can pay a little bit less, and you can still be treating with these chemicals. That wasn't the case for a lot of other insecticides. You'd have to have licensed applicators. So, and they also saw them as there's not as many acute human health risks, although the science is also building that these chemicals can have human health concerns. So people were really comfortable using them. And I think I don't want another year of losses. I don't want more pollinators to be put at risk during this year. But I am very hopeful that we can sit down and think through how can we not create, there's a way to find a solution that isn't going to have a harmful impact economically and is going to have a real benefit for our pollinators. And that's what this task force is about. And if everyone's just going to polarize and argue, we won't get there. But I really hope we can have that thoughtful conversation. It's needed.
So do you think enough has been done in the short term anyway to make sure that we don't get another summer like last year? Because, you mentioned some of the changes that were put in place by the Oregon Department of Agriculture, but it still sounds like the potential would exist for another incident like that big bee die-off at that set of factory stores in Wilsonville.
You know, it is true that it could happen again. What I hope is that we know enough about how that incident occurred. And granted, the company that caused these incidents, especially that one in Wilsonville, does not want that to happen again. That was a huge hit economically to them. That was a terrible piece of advertising. And I think companies are going to try to be more aware. And I hope that that is helpful. Department of Agriculture and Extension, OSU Extension, Oregon State University, are working on better training. Those are all helpful steps. But, you know, that was a huge die-off of a lot of bees, and they were bees that live in colonies. You know, there's going to be other bee kill dies that we're not going to know about because there's a lot of solitary bees out there that we aren't tracking. So, yes, we are still going to be seeing losses. I mean, obviously, every year we keep seeing, you know, our honeybees, our managed bees, even though the businesses are able to keep bringing bees back, they're losing 30 and 40%. So, yes, we're going to continue to see the problem. And that's where we are, and I hope we can get to a solution as soon as possible.
So with the task force at work then over the course of this next year, is there a chance for stronger legislation perhaps in the regular session in 2015?
That's exactly where we hope to move. And I think we just, you know, this was an idea from a representative that came out for a short session. We just need to build the energy around the importance of this issue and make sure that our legislators are well informed. There are definitely still people out there arguing that this isn't a problem. I just reviewed a research paper that came from a manufacturer of these products, and they found that there wasn't a significant impact when bees were foraging on plants that were treated with these chemicals. But when you look at the research, you find out that the bees were put in a place where there was lots of other forage potential. And sure enough, if you go deep enough, they were foraging on non-treated plants as well. So their exposure was much less. And so people are still debating the science. And I think, and legislators still aren't sure, well, is it really the pesticides, or is it forage, or is it something else? And the reality is there are a lot of reasons that bees are struggling. What I hope we can get to is, yes, and this is one of the problems. You know, when you're obese and you smoke and you watch TV and you eat a lot of fast food, you don't say, well, I'm not going to stop eating fast food because I'm smoking and watching TV too, and so they're all the problem. So I hope we can get to that place where we recognize that it's a significant component that we need to change.
All right. I'm A. Code with the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation, which is the pesticide program coordinator. Thanks so much for talking to us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you.